Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this next edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review on this 1st of April 2016, as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180 on a balmy night in the DMV without question. The temperature's going to be dropping soon, though, so still need to keep the hats and coats out because, you know, it's, you know, even though winter is officially over, it's still, you know, it's still not fully into spring yet. Still not all the way there. It's needed about, I would say, May. So I think spring will be fully in gear. But again, enjoying this beautiful weather out here as we get ready for a Final Four weekend, a Final Four Saturday. If you're in the NCAA tournament, you absolutely got your wish. As far as the tournament how this tournament has played out and what we are left with. You had the Blue Blood in North Carolina, the favorite, slight favorite going into this weekend. And I mean slight favorite. And by any stretch, there's not a dominant or a overwhelming favorite, preliminary favorite left amongst these four teams. North Carolina, you know, top to bottom has the best team, but I would not be shocked if North Carolina is not playing for the championship or if North Carolina doesn't win the championship come Monday night. You have the unwelcome guest, so to speak, is Syracuse. Nobody, I mean, there are people saying Syracuse didn't belong in the tournament, which was absolutely ridiculous. Syracuse was undefeated. Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't have been, they're not a 10 seed. It should have been a 6 or a 7 seed. That's first of all. You look at Syracuse's resume, you look what they did over playing in a brutal ACC, you'll see that, you know, they had much better talent, had better talent than what people gave them credit for. And you have two teams in Oklahoma and Villanova who have been perennial quality programs, top 15, top, you know, 20 programs over the past 5 or 6 years, who are, you know, looking to get over that hump. Especially Oklahoma, who's never won a national championship. You know what happened with Villanova 31 years ago. But who are looking to kind of burst themselves into that next echelon of top tier programs. So to me, you have an absolute perfect balance in terms of this Final Four. And, you know, the games, listen, the games, the North Carolina game, you know, the Villanova, you know, Villanova-Oklahoma game is the better game, but North Carolina is the most high-profile team. That's why North Carolina is playing at 8:49 and playing the second game, not the first game. So, you know, there you go with that. But both these games should be very good games. Don't get confused by North Carolina being number one seed versus Syracuse being a 10 seed. I watched both those Syracuse games, both those games this year. They were extremely competitive games. Extremely competitive games. Syracuse was in both of those games the last 5 or 6 minutes. So that I am, and again, the Oklahoma Villanova game is a toss up. I would lean towards Oklahoma because of Buddy Hill, best player on the floor. But I, like I said, Villanova could easily win that game. Easily. Jay Wright and Lon Cougar, you know, have been coaching for a while. They, you know, who knows, they'll coach another 10, 8, 9, 10 years. They're both about to be young. This could be it for Roy Williams and Jim Boeheim as far as their last chance to win a championship. And I was thinking about that today, especially with Roy Williams. North Carolina does not get the level of talent it used to get as far as the recruits goes. Now, again, they have one McDonald's All-American coming in this year, the Bradley kid, 6'10 kid, Tony Bradley. I think his name is Bradley, Tony Bradley. McDonald's won he's the one that got All American. They did get. And there are a couple other guys who are still undecided, who I'm sure they're in the mix for. But you know, it was a time when North Carolina was, you know, 3 to 4 McDonald's All Americans every year. Now that distinction goes to Duke and Kentucky, and to a lesser extent, Kansas and Arizona and teams of that nature. And, you know, you read this article just about how, you know, Roy Williams, who suffers from the vertigo, bad, you know, knees, and, you know, physically breaking down, this could be it as far as his last chance to win another championship. Now, he has 2 rings. Bayon has 1. So, I mean, their careers are set in stone as far as, you know, all-time great head coaches, without question, Hall of Fame coaches. That is, I mean, their legacies are intact. There's nothing that can be... Nothing's going to take away from their legacies, their legacies are even beyond the scandals, seemingly beyond the scandals that are happening off the court with both universities, with what Syracuse dealt with last year, what North Carolina could potentially deal with. But both these guys are all-time great coaches. But again, this could be it for both of them as far as their last chance to win another championship. And if you're North Carolina, you know, listen, you will not, like, North Carolina has had a relatively smooth sailing as far as this tournament goes. They have not played a seed higher than 5 in any of these games. Now, if they get past Syracuse, which will be a tough game, the Oklahoma Villanova game will be a definite game that they can lose. But they're going to go through this tournament without playing at 180. A number one seed. The thing you're concerned about with tomorrow's games is the venue. Being well documented, well talked about the shooting, the depth perception with the shooting at that dome in Houston. Last time they had a Final Four there, Connecticut, of course, won the championship 2011. That was Calhoun's last championship. Last championship, his third and last championship with Connecticut. And, you know, people don't forget, but that was, you know, if you're a Connecticut fan, you don't care. But that, college basketball fan perspective, that was one of the worst national championship games ever. That probably was the worst national championship game ever. I mean, Butler shot like 18% in the second half. 53-41. The game was just, it was a brick fest, to say the least. And 3 of these 4 teams, North Carolina excluded from that list, are heavily counted on the 3-point shot. So you worry about that in terms of the quality of play. You want to see games somewhat well played. I'm always nervous about these zones because of the depth perception and I liked it better in the old days when they were playing in regular arenas. I understand why they switched the domes, considering how the capacity and, you know, the money and how much more people, you know, just listen, like it's a numbers game, 50,000, 60,000 people versus, you know, 25,000 or 18,000. So you do the math on that one. So you understand why they play in the domes. But the quality, but again, especially in particular this dome in Houston versus the other domes, now it hasn't even been a comparison. The shooting, you know, they did a number of stats, 3-point shooting, field goal percentage. I mean, the shooting goes down dramatically in this dome. So that's something as a fan that you should be concerned about come tomorrow night. Otherwise, in terms of the competitiveness of the games, I think both these games are going to be close games. If one had a chance to get away from the other, it would be North Carolina getting away from Syracuse. But I still think that's going to be a competitive game. Again, Oklahoma, Villanova will be, a complete toss-up of the game. Again, before the tournament, I liked North Carolina and Oklahoma. I haven't seen anything that will steer me away from that prediction come Monday night. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this next edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. When we come back, Tiger Woods, Steph Curry, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. We'll be right back. 407-215-6180 is the call number on this next edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. Just came over the wire. Tiger Woods is out of the matches. I did not, certainly is no surprise, shock to anybody. I didn't expect him to play. You know, he has a lot. Listen, Tiger is a very prideful individual. There are places that, you know, he'll go and get embarrassed and not think too much of it. Augusta National is not one of them. Like, when he goes there, he expects to win. Like, he's not there just for a show. He's not there just to entertain. He's going there to try to win a tournament. And despite recent, you know, injuries and all the other stuff that's going on in his life, he has, you know, he hasn't won it since 2005, but he's put up some good showings at Augusta in the last 4 or 5 years. He's had some pretty good showings. Yeah, he hasn't really embarrassed himself for the most part, like we've seen in other tournaments. So there was no way that he was going to play in this tournament. I felt concerned, like saying, just he physically just can't do it right now. He's physically, like, he's, you know, talking about 3 back surgeries. He's physically shot. Like, I don't know if Tiger Woods will ever play golf again, to be honest with you. A lot of talk about Tiger Woods and what has been wrong with his career and what, you know, where it is. I mean, we know when it happened, but I think too much is being made on his fall and not enough on just his personal life. I don't think not enough made on the fact that this guy, you know, you go back to 2009, you know, this guy was married with 2 kids, and all of a sudden in 1 weekend, you go from that to basically being divorced in about, what, 9 months. I don't think enough has been made on that aspect of his life. Like, this guy went through a life change where, you know, no wife, basically no kids. He still spends time with his kids. I don't know what the custody situation is, but he still sees his kids. But it's not the same as when they were all together in one household. So you can point to the injuries. You can point to can't control his driver, can't make putts. Don't dismiss the fact that, again, this guy went through a life-changing, life-altering situation. I think, you know, one of the things Tiger Woods did throughout his winning is made it seem like he was almost not human and somewhat, even in his personality at times, somewhat robotic. Let's hear a little secret. He's not a robot. He's a human being who has emotions, who has feelings, who has a heart. And I just can't think that situation did not have a profound effect on the fall of his career. I don't think that it's just been enough has been made about that. See, people are looking at the theater of that situation. Look at the fact that he came out, crashed the car in house shoes. Allegedly, she came after him with a golf club, and you know, looking at that aspect, or you know, the cheating, that aspect of it, or the injuries, things like that nature. Looking at the kind of like the stuff that's on the surface. When a guy loses his game, a guy of that magnitude loses it completely, you gotta look a little bit deeper. First of all, we all need to accept the fact that it is over. That his career, basically, as we know it, is done. Like, it will never be what he once was. I would not be surprised if he never picks up a golf club competitively again, steps on a golf course again. Plays professionally. I would not be shocked. He's got plenty of money. nothing else left to accomplish. He's not going to break Nicholas's record. That would be the only accomplishment that he had left. He's not, that's not going to happen. And to me, based on recent comments that he's made in the past couple months, that passion, that love for the game is just not there anymore. Like, this guy has completely been, you know, broken down by injuries, by, you know, life circumstances, and the whole bit. And remember with Tiger Woods, you know, Tiger, when he was, like, you just have to put in perspective what he did before you go into the, he underachieved or he came apart. Like, the guy from 2008, okay, from 1999 to 2008, he won 13 majors out of a possible 38 majors. Two of them he didn't participate in due to injury. Put that in perspective. 13 out of a possible 38. That's about 40%, 38% of majors that he participated in, he won. This is just insane, right? Again, a run of dominance that we've never seen and we'll never see again. Golf is still trying to recover from Tiger not being, you know, Tiger. Like, the ratings are down. Interest in sports not there. There are a number of talented players, young upstarts. You know, hopefully the Rory-Jordan Spieth rivalry that carries into the next 5 to 10 years. But it's not Tiger Woods. It's not Phil Mickelson, for that matter. Like, those two carry the sport from a popularity standpoint for the better part of 15, 20 years. And that is no longer the case. Still pretty good. He has an occasional, you know, run where he'll challenge for a major. But, you know, remember, Tiger Woods changed the sport. He transcended the sport. I mean, transcended athletes. Like, those guys, they'll make those guys on trees, or girls on trees. So I just think that, you know, you have to remember what he did and put it in proper perspective, his dominance. And remember, the guy's a human being. Like, that, somebody goes through a divorce and, you know, that, like, I can't think that didn't have an effect on his game. Moving forward, I just can't believe that it didn't have a distinct effect on his game. Again, we're talking about a guy who made golf look easy. So the idea that the most talented golfer of all time would just lose his putting stroke, not be able to control his driver, lose completely the ability to play golf based on just because it's between his ears. I just don't buy it. When a guy who was as mentally as tough as an athlete that we've ever seen, I don't buy it. That's the complete reason why he fell apart, because he just mentally didn't believe in himself anymore. Like, no. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me. And you're telling me that guy, again, injuries are one thing, but you're telling me that guy who is as mentally tough of an athlete that we've ever seen, all of a sudden doesn't believe in himself? That's the reason why he's not who he, you know, is not dominating or is not winning? Again, besides the injuries, you got to consider the three back surgeries that he had. This guy, you know, for a long time had a wicked swing that was certainly at some point was going to catch up with him further along in his career or later in his career. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joel Coon Review. Coming up, we're talking NBA. And RG3, that's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joel Coon Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. 347-205-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joel Quinn Review. A couple of program notes. We are still going to do, I'm trying to see this engineer. Okay. Not, you know, Kent Baseball. I thought, I shouldn't say that. I mean, oh, that's so mean. It was Kent Baseball. I thought it was Horford, Millsap, but, ooh, that was a hardball. Hawks and Cavaliers playing basically, to me, a meaningless game as the playoffs, NBA playoffs can't start soon enough. It's for my man. For my money. I respect deeply what Golden State is doing. They've carried the season, living along with San Antonio and Russell Westbrook have carried the NBA season, but it's time for the playoffs. I mean, it's all it is. It's absolutely time for the playoffs to start. Couple of program notes. We still have two parts of our three-part series of The Wire to complete. So hopefully by next week, we can get part two in. Looking at next week, pretty late next week, to get part two in of the series of The Wire Revisited, which will focus on season four, which to me probably the greatest season in television history, as far as that goes. So we'll see if we can get that in. Also, baseballs are opening up Sunday night. Royals, Mets, Royals are already talking about payback in regards to the Syndergaard pitching the World Series. We'll see what happens with that. They will open it up Sunday night baseball with the Royals and Mets. Kansas City coming in as the defending world champions. Baseball hasn't had a repeat winner since the Yankees, I was. Yes. So baseball hasn't repeat winner since the Yankees, so I don't expect that to change this year. Somebody will come out of nowhere and finally win a championship, or be a team that we sure saw coming, that we sure saw coming, that's on the cusp of being a playoff team. So that's what baseball is at. It's a great place. Baseball is in a great place right now, as far as I'm concerned. The parity teams, having to do it the right way. They have a bunch of young talent. So if you're a baseball fan, you have to be reason to be excited and happy for the upcoming season. Opening day on Monday, CeCe Sabathia will be the fifth starter for the Yankees. He gets it over Ivan Nova. Think about that for a second. CeCe Sabathia was a guy who at one point was one of the top five pitchers in all of baseball, a surefire number one starter, a guy that you can count off for 200 plus innings, 220 plus innings, 17 to 20 wins. 2.5 to 3 ERA. I mean, the guy was a horse. But wear and tear, and now the guy, basically is fighting for number five to be a fifth starter on a team that doesn't have overwhelmingly great starting pitching to begin with. They have decent starting pitching. The sure for that team is their bullpen. So that is quite a fall for a guy who would be one of those guys who would be a borderline Hall of Fame pitcher. So you have baseball starting over Sunday night, starting off Monday. We'll try to get some baseball show in next week, try to get Maluces on, talk some Yankees, Mets. Do a role reversal as far as the team to beat in New York or the team to beat in baseball in regards to Mets and Yankees. You have Mets come in clearly with higher prospects than the Yankees this year, though, you can't never discount the Yankees. And that bullpen they have, the Mets clearly have the better of the two teams without question. So with the NBA here, again, Golden State has absolutely carried the NBA season. I mean, just carried the NBA season. They're going to break this record after 72 wins. They'll probably win 73. I think that once they reach 73, that they'll shut it down. Like, they're 73-7. And then, they'll put them at 80 games. Those last couple of games, they won't, you'll see some rest. You'll see them rest in there, to be honest with you. You'll see some rest in those last couple of games. If they get to a point where they're 73-7, they will host Boston tonight, rematching one of the games of the year. That first Boston matchup when Golden State was 23-0, shorthanded. You could see that they were starting to physically wear down a bit. Played a great, just that was a tremendous basketball game that frankly Boston should have won. came, Boston should have won, but lost in double overtime to Golden State. And Golden State, of course, would lose the following night to the Milwaukee Bucks in resounding fashion. So we'll see what happens with Golden State. Also, of course, the latest Cavalier who can't shut up, Kyrie Irving, proclaimed something that we already all know, that Cleveland is the team to beat in the East. I mean, he might have met the whole NBA, but I'm just assuming that, you know, he wasn't drunk or high and said that and meant that the Eastern Conference. Because, we all know who the team to beat is and who are the teams to beat, for that matter, as far as Golden State and San Antonio being, you know, number two behind them. But, Cavaliers just can't shut up and play basketball. I mean, it's always something. They always have to make a comment. There has to be a tweet. It has to be something that they just have. They have to try to find a way to keep our attention other than just playing basketball and getting to the playoffs. So we'll see what transpires with them. Of course, we know they're a team to beat in the Eastern Conference. There's nothing in the East. Though I wouldn't fear them if I were Toronto, if I were Charlotte, some other team like that. I actually would have no fear for Cavaliers, to be honest with you. But they are, without question, the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Of course, the basketball story of the week, maybe the basketball, the sports story of the week, lies in L.A., which found themselves on the wrong side of the headlines in regards to D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young. Now, I work in a profession that I'm taught to look beyond the action. Like, I'll see something happen, I won't be overwhelmed by what happened, instead of saying, like, wow, what, like, being blown away by the action. I've looked to, you know, without giving details, I look to see, why did this happen? What was behind this happening? What's beneath the, you know, what is beneath the surface here? And I think that's how you got to look at this situation with Russell and Nick Young. You have a guy, first of all, you have a completely dysfunctional franchise who just wouldn't know, don't know which way is up from top to bottom, from owner to head coach to aging, retiring icon. They just don't, like, the only competent guy there right now is Gary Beattie, who's retiring after 20 plus years being the Laker Laker trainer. So when you have that kind of dysfunction, when you are at the time, I believe they were 15-58, these type of things are bound to happen. I'm not going to knock D'Angelo Russell as much as other people have. D'Angelo Russell is a rookie in the second largest market in the country, as a number one draft pick, and as a guy who, frankly, has no guidance on that team as far as teaching him how to be a professional, to be honest with you. And I have to take Kobe out of that equation, because Kobe Bryant's on his farewell tour, so he doesn't have time to show you how to be a professional. He's doing his own thing right now. He's in retirement mode, and he's thinking about the next phase of his life, and also getting, you know, 10 pounds of ice packs fit on, to his credit, because he could have just packed it in a while ago. So, you know, I have to look at this situation, and I said, you know, it's not shocking that it happened. It was just, to me, you know, you look at the franchise, it was only a matter of time before it happened. You have Nick Young, who no playoff team, no team in their right mind would want him on their team, even to fill out a roster, to be honest with you. But I wouldn't want Nick Young near my franchise. Remember, the Wizards ran Nick Young out of D.C. because they didn't want him. They didn't want him to be to have any influence whatsoever on John Wall. Okay, the Wizards. We're not talking about the Spurs here. We're talking about the Wizards. who have their own issues over the past, you know, 30 years or so. So I'm looking at the situation, I'm like, so I'm going to tell a guy something, I'm going to tell somebody who I've known less than a year things about me that could potentially cripple my relationship. Right. And then I'm going to allow him to walk out the room knowing that this was recorded. Okay. Like Nick Young, you know, I don't wish anybody's relationship to go down the toilet or to you know, sort of break up. I could care less about Nick Young and Iggy Azalea. To be honest with you, it's, you know, Nick Young kind of got what he deserved here, didn't he? I mean, you know, you're 30 years old and you're bragging about, you know, sexual conquest as you are still in high school in the locker room at 15 or 16. Like, dude, you're 30 years old. Been in the league now for the better part of a decade, okay? But we're blaming the 19-year-old. Like, why are you even having a conversation of that ilk with a 19-year-old? Yeah, somebody, my uncle, I had an uncle tell me a long time ago, you don't hang down, you hang up. Man, you're 15 years old, you don't hang with 10-year-olds. You get caught with hanging with adults, parents might be unhappy, but you're going up, you're aiming high. So the fact that Nick Young is on your team, okay, lends itself to be, is a disaster. So, again, this was something that was just bound to happen. It was bound to happen, something like this. So don't look at the individual, D'Angelo Russell. Look at the culture. Look at the culture. Again, I'm not sharing any type of news, any type of personal information with a guy that I've known for less than a year. I don't care how many jump shots we've taken together. I don't care how many showers. I don't care. Like, I don't care how. Like, there's no way. There's no way you can know somebody less than a year and fully trust them with that type of information. If you do, you're just a flat out jackass. That's all there is to it. You're a jackass, or you just have something's mentally wrong with you. In Nick Young's case, it could be both, to be honest with you. So, again, Lakers get what they deserve. Nick Young got what he deserved. If D'Angelo Russell, if he goes out there next year, next 5-6 years, average 20-8, nobody will care. It's a 24-hour news cycle. The story will blow over in 2 months. And this idea about trust and, you know, bro code and all this nonsense, give me a break. Give me a break. D'Angelo Russell, his job is not to have people trust him. His job is to put the biscuit in the basket, score baskets, set people up. That's what his job is. If nobody's willing to share their deepest secrets with D'Angelo Russell, so be it. Who cares? Yeah, really. (347) 215-6180 is the call number on this next edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. We'll be right back. you wonder why the NFL is in the state of, in terms of the on the field performance as in right now, despite the popularity. Like last year, let's be honest, the level of play in the NFL was dreadful. It was horrible. Well, part of the reason why is you have NFL came out with its off-season schedule as far as OTAs and team meetings and things of that nature. There are three phases to it. And none of the three phases are contact allowed. No contact allowed. Okay. Only in phase three will an offense and defense be allowed to go against each other in phase three. So, I mean, basically, you're lifting weights, you're rehabbing the injuries. I mean, you're going over the playbook, you're watching some film, stuff that you probably could be doing, you know, at your own, on your own time, to be honest with you. Like, some players could get together. And I'm sure you got some of these teams breaking these rules. I can't believe that they're all the way going, following all these rules as far as, you know, offense not going against the defense and things of that nature. But part of the reason why you have why teams are struck, why the game looks the way it looks on the field is a lack of continuity, chemistry, stability. It is a number of things, but this is part of it. These OTAs, this off-season programs are an absolute joke in the NFL. They're a joke. When you take contact out of football, there's no purpose. It's football. Like, you're not accomplishing nothing without contact. I'm sorry. That stuff you can meet up with a couple of buddies on a team and go with a playbook or films or lift weights. You can do that by yourself. These guys train you around anyway on their own. Now, again, this was negotiated by the collective bargaining agreement by the players. So don't blame the NFL. Don't blame the owners or the teams. I mean, this was negotiated by the players. But again, if you're watching 2016 season and you're seeing just bad football, think about this. Think about the lack of organization. Lack of contact and, you know, just a lack of chemistry. Think about that when it comes to these OTAs. Also, one that squeezes in, UConn basketball, not women's basketball, that is, has won 120 out of their last 100. They're 120-1 over the last 4.5-5 years or so, going after the 4th straight championship. You heard Gino Auriemma recently basically snap on Dan Shaughnessy, a longtime Boston Globe writer, about knocking the women's game, saying UConn was, you know, ruining the women's game because there was no competition and what have you, and so on and so on. Now, ratings say otherwise, but you know, basic premise was, you know, that the game's not watchable because we already know what the end result's going to be. This is why Gino Auriemma was pissed off, because you don't spend your entire life perfecting something, whether it's coaching or any other walk of life, reach the highest level, and then have somebody tell you that it's not in the best interest of whatever particular field that you're in, and that you're hurting your field that you're in. You're hurting the field, particular field that you're in. That would get anybody upset. You know, again, I'm not into women's basketball as much as I used to be when Tennessee, Notre Dame, when those guys were able to stay on the floor in Connecticut. Connecticut's gotten so good, they have made it tough to watch. But it's just because what the end result is going to be. But it still should be acknowledged of what they're doing is beyond belief and should be something that just should be acknowledged, that they've gotten to a level to where they're not competing against other teams. They're competing ghosts, and we're not talking about ghosts of Tennessee ghost of Louisiana Tech, ghost of USC. They're competing against ghost of UConn teams in the past. Like, is this team as good as the 2002 team? Is this team as good as the 2014 team or 2012 team? That's the level they're at right now, period. And I don't want to hear about they get every All-American. They're not the only team in college basketball, women's college basketball, that gets McDonald's All-Americans. They're not. So, you know, Gino Auriemma has built an empire at that school, not a dynasty, an empire. Like, they are the Roman Empire right now of sports. But that program is done. We're talking about 11 championships. They're going to be looking at 11 championships in 21 years, four straight. Again, there was a time when Tennessee was right there with them. There was a time when Notre Dame could annoy them. Nobody is within the stratosphere of UConn basketball right now, women's basketball. Like, it's not like it's just it's nobody, no one. Of course, beginning the program talking about the Final Four, you have for the first time ever you'll have the Final Four not on CBS, well on TBS. CBS had had it for like 34 straight years. It'll be all the games remaining in the tournament will be on TBS. You'll still have the same announcing crews. You have Nance, Rathery, who are great together. Grant Hill just, and I'm not saying this because I'm more confident, but Grant Hill's awful. I don't know why Grant Hill's there. He's, you know, he's horrible as an announcer. But you still have Nance and Rathery. Again, North Carolina goes in as the slight overall favorite left in the tournament. But any one of those three teams can get to a championship. Well, I don't think Syracuse can win a championship. Three out of four teams can win a championship. Oklahoma, Villanova is a toss-up. I like North Carolina over Syracuse, again, in a close game. And I think you will get – if we get North Carolina, Oklahoma, that will be an absolute classic. And both teams, like, will go up and down the court. Both teams, you know, they'll have great player versus great team, Buddy Hill versus – but a lot can happen between now and Monday night. Who knows, Syracuse could be the similar. You know, we've seen teams, you know, Connecticut had a couple of runs where, you know, as a seventh seed and they won a championship a couple of years ago. I think they were like even a nine seed, something like that. So it's not out of the possibility that Syracuse, who was underseeded as a number 10, can win the championship. But again, I like North Carolina. Monday, we will do a championship preview show. Talk about the semifinals and preview the championship game. So that'll be taking place on Monday night. I will see you then. Have a great, great weekend. See you on Monday night.